Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Tuesday, July 16th, 2024. We have four cases set for oral argument via Zoom today. This is the fourth one. This is A23-0489 in the matter of the welfare of the child of BDD and DAA. Counsel, this is being live streamed and it is being recorded as well. However, no other recordings are allowed. Each party will have 15 minutes for their initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant if you so choose. We do have a timer in one of the squares, so please be cognizant of that and make sure you stay within your time. If we do run into technical difficulties at all, we will make sure that we address them and allow all the parties the sufficient time for their oral arguments. Counsels, when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party that you are representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Mallory Stoll. I am here representing the appellant, Father DAA, in this appeal. The father is also present this morning for argument. DAA respectfully requests that this court reverse the order voluntarily terminating his parental rights to his daughter TD, primarily for two reasons. The first argument raised by DAA is that the district court erred when it determined it properly exercised jurisdiction under the UCCJEA in order to terminate his parental rights. Second, DAA raises the issue that the district court issued an order terminating his parental rights based on a ground that was not alleged in the petition for termination of parental rights and was never added by oral amendment. That amounts to a violation of DAA's due process rights and would also warrant reversal. I will note that it is DAA's position that if the court determines that the court erred on either of these issues, that would be sufficient for this court to reverse and ultimately provide the remedy of dismissing the petition in this matter. As the district court commented on the second day of trial, we have to follow the letter of the law. It wasn't until more than 11 months after commencement of the child protection proceedings that the district court first considered and meaningfully discussed the issue of jurisdiction. This is despite the fact that the record was replete with evidence to suggest that there was another state, namely Florida, that had made an initial child custody determination as to the child TD. There was also the, yes, Your Honor.
Yes, I mean, and I think the record is clear that there was an initial custody determination by the Florida court, but it appears to me, based on the record, that the Florida court did not continue to exercise its subject matter jurisdiction over the matter. And in fact, it appears that the district court, the Florida district court judge, confirmed that by saying the case was closed, so we have no jurisdiction, Based on that, is there even an issue under the UCCJEA?
Most certainly, Your Honor. When we talk about, and the cases that are immediately coming to mind that I did cite in my brief that bear this out are the persuasive authorities, both from the Iowa Court of Appeals as well as the Alabama Court of Appeals. But here's how the UCCJEA works, at least based on my interpretation. Once that initial child custody determination made, we need to go then to 518D.202, which provides that the court that made that initial determination has continuing and exclusive jurisdiction until it doesn't. So it doesn't rely upon or require to be there to be pending ongoing proceedings in order for that continuing and exclusive jurisdiction to remain in this case with Florida. So simply the fact that there wasn't a matter actively ongoing or actively pending doesn't mean that the initial custody determination essentially becomes meaningless. And I do agree with Your Honor, you are correct that the Florida court ultimately did relinquish jurisdiction, I believe was the term used during the UCCJEA conference. The problem with that is that if we kind of take a step back here, Your Honor acknowledged, Florida made that initial custody determination. We then have to go to 518D.203, which provides the grounds under which Minnesota could modify that initial child custody determination. And the fact of the matter is that did not happen until February 28th, 2023 at the absolute earliest. the remedy that is provided when a court issues orders that are contrary to the UCC-JEA, such that it did not have jurisdiction, is to dismiss the action and the prior orders that resulted from that improper exercise of jurisdiction.
But under both sections that you're referring to, under 518D.201 sub A1, I'm sorry, sub A, sub A2, it does talk about how if a court of another state does not have jurisdiction under clause one, or a court of the home state of the child has declined to exercise jurisdiction on the ground that the state is a more appropriate forum under section 518D.207 or 518D.208. And then when we look at Minnesota statute 518D.203 subdivision one, it talks about how the court of the other state determines it no longer has exclusive continuing jurisdiction under section 518D.02, or that a court of the state would be a more convenient forum under section 518D.207. And the Florida court seemed to acknowledge that not just one, but both of those applied in this case. It said, one, we are no longer exercising exclusive continuing jurisdiction, and we haven't since a date prior to the February date you mentioned. And to the extent that Minnesota would be a more convenient forum, we would. It seems to me that the district court here did what it should have done when the issue of subject matter jurisdiction did, and reached out to, as required by statute, reach out to Florida to see whether or not they were continuing to exercise jurisdiction or not. Why am I wrong in that analysis?
Judge Reyes, that was a really long question, so I'm going to
Sorry
let you
about
know
that.
I'm going to take it piecemeal, but I will pause to make sure I answer all parts of your question. So I do have the UCC-JEA in front of me, and when I look at 518D.202, we've already established Florida made an initial child custody determination. When we go to 518D.202, it says, and I should note, and this is cited in the brief, Florida's UCC-JEA is almost identical, if not identical, to Minnesota's. So continuing on, a court that exercises and has made an initial child custody determination has exclusive and continuing jurisdiction until. So if we look then at 202A1, which is really the subdivision we are at for this case, because the mother remained in Florida throughout these proceedings. So if we look at paren one, it says a court of this state determines that the child's parents and any person acting as a parent do not have significant connection with this state, and that substantial evidence is no longer available in this state. Now, that pertains to the exclusive continuing jurisdiction. My concern with the premise of your question, as I understood it, Judge Reyes, is the Florida, we could potentially be in a situation where no state has jurisdiction if it just could automatically go away under the UCC-JEA. Where we really need to go, and where I think this court really needs to focus its analysis on, is whether the district court in this case properly exercised jurisdiction under 518D.203 when it modified the initial child custody determination. I don't think anyone is disputing that that is what happened in this case. So we have Florida that had the continuing and exclusive jurisdiction. And I think the other problem I will note, Your Honor, is, you know, had this conference taken place earlier, had the Florida court, you know, we don't know what the Florida court would have done and making its determination whether Minnesota would be the proper forum to continue on with this case. The problem is it did not happen until February 28th, 2023. And you can't cure or correct a jurisdictional defect and apply that cure retroactively, dating back in this case, over 11 months, in order to try to obtain jurisdiction under the UCC-JEA.
Well, I think we can have a pretty good idea of what the Florida court would have done, because we have the, you know, response from the Florida court. I would also highlight you do You did file a notice of supplemental case, a Skyberg opinion. As you know, I'm very
Yes.
familiar with that.
Yes.
I mean, there's also, I think you had mentioned that you thought that that might be applicable to this. I'm not sure it is, but to the extent that that would come into play, even if Florida did have ongoing continuing jurisdiction, you can still have that pause so another court can exercise it. And so to the extent that that even applies, this court, the Minnesota court, could have done that. It could have said, hey, you know what, let's talk to Florida and see whether or not they're going to continue or whether or not we can have temporary. But that did not come into play here at all, because the Florida court said, we have no jurisdiction.
Couple things. So yes, could have talked to Florida, but they didn't. And that is required under the UCCJEA. As soon as the district court is aware or there's evidence to suggest that there is a prior initial custody determination.
Can I stop you right there? Isn't that
of
what
course.
Happened here? Didn't the district court, as soon as the issue of subject matter jurisdiction and another court potentially having subject matter jurisdiction, didn't the district court here in Minnesota pause it to say, okay, wait a minute, let's figure out this issue of subject matter jurisdiction, because that issue can be raised at any time? Didn't the
No.
district court address the issue as soon as it came to its attention?
No, because again, that would assume that the court had already properly exercised jurisdiction in Minnesota for the duration of the proceedings. And if I'm understanding your question correctly, perhaps the argument could be made, and I think this is what you're alluding to, could Minnesota have exercised temporary emergency jurisdiction? The answer is yes, but it didn't correctly in this case. And the
but
problem—
my question is, didn't the district court, Minnesota district court, didn't they take the proper steps of when the issue was first raised to the Minnesota district court of questioning whether or not it had subject matter jurisdiction? Didn't it take the appropriate steps at that time? It sounds to me like you're insinuating that the Minnesota district court should have done something earlier.
Absolutely.
How could the Minnesota district court have done something earlier when it was only notified at this particular time questioning its subject matter jurisdiction?
That's not the first time it was notified, Your Honor. If you look at the record in this case, namely when the petition for termination of parental rights was filed, I believe it was in September of 2022. I apologize if I have that month wrong. I know it's cited in my brief. That petition, when we look at the other requirements under the UCCJEA of what disclosures and affidavits need to be filed, that gave everybody notice that there was a prior adjudication order in Florida that began in 2019 and was issued in 2021. That is the absolute latest, in my view, based on the record that we have on appeal, that the court needed to do that conference, and it didn't. I am not suggesting that there was any malicious intent or ill will, but that's not what the UCCJEA requires. It requires that conference to happen immediately. It didn't. So as a result of that, father is in a position where he's faced with, do I have to go to trial on this petition? Do I try to enter a settlement or an agreement? Meanwhile, the court is not properly exercising jurisdiction.
So are you saying that we should, let's assume that we were to agree with you. Are you saying that we should hold that district courts are required to contact another court to determine jurisdiction in another state merely because there is a statement that another proceeding had been held in another state?
That wouldn't be the point of law that I would ask the court to adopt. I would narrow it a bit, Your Honor. I think the point of law is just simply, in order to properly exercise jurisdiction, the district court needs to follow the requirements of the UCCJEA. And I'm sorry, that's not the most artful point of law. I'm trying to kind of think on the fly here. But I think the issue ultimately comes down to the fact that We had a prior order. There's very specific processes under which the Minnesota District Court needed to or could have obtained jurisdiction, and it didn't. It did not properly obtain jurisdiction under 518D.204 because it didn't follow those requirements under which it could exercise temporary emergency jurisdiction, much like Iowa did in the Skyberg case. I do agree that there are
But in the Skyberg case, that just like in here, the issue was raised to the district court.
But I don't see anything in the UCC JEA that says, well, if no one raises it or if no one notices it, we just don't care about it. It's a jurisdictional issue that can't be waived.
I understand that. But my concern is, and I'll just speaking for myself, my concern is requiring district courts to dive into this issue, and what at what point are they supposed to do it? Obviously, if the issue is raised before them, as it was in Skyberg or as it was in here, it seems reasonable to require them to take a look at it. But merely because there's information of a proceeding in another jurisdiction, to require, it sounds like you're asking us to require now district courts to sua sponte look at the issue on their own to determine whether or not they in fact have jurisdiction. And maybe on rebuttal, if you can cite to any authority to support that, that'd be appreciated.
Would you like me to wait to answer for rebuttal, Your Honor?
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Very good. So. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Counsel for respondent, you will now have 15 minutes for your arguments, and you may begin when you're ready. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you, Katie Scher, and I'm the attorney for the respondent, Otter Tail County Department of Human Services. May it please the court? I think I'm going to modify my argument just a little bit based on the questions that have already been posed to the court. But I do want to start out in saying that the thing that I think gets lost a lot of times in the arguments that come before your honors is what we are really trying to do in these cases. We are trying to look out for what's the best interest of the children. And the best interest is paramount in every case, whether the UCC JEA applies or does not. And the purpose of the UCC JEA is to further promote the best interest of the children, and that its purpose is to avoid jurisdictional competition and conflict and promote cooperation between the courts. If you look back at the founding principles of the UCC JEA, that is what it is founded on. Now, the district court in this case, sua sponte, addressed this. It's indicated in the briefs that this was raised by the appellant. That is incorrect. The court actually brought this to the attention of everyone on the first day of the termination trial. So it was the court that looked at this issue, and it was the court that raised this issue for the first time on the first day of trial. Now, I would assert that it's very easy to look back and see what the agency should have done earlier, what the court should have done earlier. But what the court did in this case is try and look at this issue and make sure that everything they were doing was correct, that they were in compliance, and that they were working for what is in the best interest of the child. I would assert also that the appellate in this case is requesting the court to, as a remedy, dismiss the petition in this case. But that's not the appropriate remedy. If the court finds that the district court violated the UCC JEA and did not have subject matter jurisdiction in this case, the appropriate thing to do is to send this back to the district court and have them address it. They've already done that. Florida has already relinquished jurisdiction and based on the UCC JEA, made a determination that they are not the appropriate forum for this case.
Ms. Scher, as I understand Ms. Stoll's argument, it has to do with the timing of this, and that, in fact, at the time that the district court made a determination that it was going to change custody of the child, so I think this means going all the way back to when the county removed the child from the home and changed custody, that it didn't have jurisdiction to do that at that time. And that is not something that can be cured later in time. And I think that is the basis of the argument in terms of we can't go back. What is your best argument in response to that?
Well, I think it's important for the courts to recognize, and I don't know that this was hit on very hard in either of the briefs that were submitted, but the argument then would be that we revert back to Florida and for Florida to make to enforce that custody determination. But what's important to note in that is that appellant was not the custodial parent. The custodial parent was mother, and mother was the primary custodian, with father having reasonable visitation. Mother was absent throughout this entire case, despite active efforts by the agency to contact her and to get in touch with her. She did not surface until approximately November of 2022, when she was served with the permanency petition in this case. And so she was the reunification parent. She was the one that custody would have reverted back to, and she was absent throughout this case. So essentially, we're working under an idea that a child has been abandoned and that there is no one to return custody to but for working services with the family. And so while I think that it's important to look back and see that the court could have exercised this emergency jurisdiction and look to see how far the district court could have taken that, I think it's important to look at also the reality of the situation and the common sense approach with where would this child have gone? We have an absent parent. We have this jurisdiction under the Florida court that the district court in Minnesota actively took efforts to address this as soon as it was brought to their attention and that they became really aware of this. There is an argument made that this was brought up in the petition, but and that it should have been addressed earlier. I don't disagree with that. I also think it's important to recognize that these are cases that are in front of the district court for this case for over a year. The court was enveloped in this, the agency was enveloped in this, and the number of cases that come before the district court, I think it's easy to look back and say what should have been done or what could have been done, not being in the reality of the situation and what was going on at the time. I also think that it's important for the court to look at, again, back on the basis of what the UCCJEA was founded on and what the purposes of that were, and that's what happened in this case. Florida very well could have exercised jurisdiction at that point and said, wait, hold on, I think that we should do this. But in looking at the UCCJEA, all the cases that have come out addressing the UCCJEA, the majority of those cases that look at a reversal of a district court's actions, either the other court has not been contacted or the other court is asserting that they have the primary jurisdiction. That's not what happened in this case. I think that this court should also take into consideration the fact that, especially in the last 5 years, our nation has become transient and people are constantly moving. The Florida court, when they were contacted and had this conference with the Minnesota District Court, recognized that they did not have information on this family. They had an order that was sent to them and they signed it. This was not a contested issue in Florida. It was not a child protection case where they had a lot of interaction with this family. It was something that came before the court. It was not a disagreement between the parties and they signed it. And the Florida court recognized that the Minnesota court had the services, had the information about this family and about what had happened and were the more appropriate jurisdiction to address these things. The Florida court recognized that the alternative would have been to uproot this child, send them back to Florida, and readdress all the things that Minnesota had already done. Nurse, I wanted to touch just briefly on the other issue that was asserted by appellant as the focus of their appeal, and that has to do with the voluntary termination in this case, and asserting that was not something that was pled in the petition. But the court can see from the transcripts in this case that was something that was addressed by the district court, and it was actually raised by the parent attorneys in this case. They were the ones that came before and and requested voluntary termination and submitted affidavits well in advance. I believe it was a week in advance of the hearing actually happening. The agency agreed to it and said, yes, we can do the voluntary termination. But as this court is aware, there is a number of cases going back to for the court to even consider a withdrawal of that consent, that the parents must demonstrate that there was serious and compelling reason for the withdrawal of that consent. Absent a showing of fraud, duress, or undue influence, this court doesn't do that. And so I would request that this court does deny a reversal of the district court's order simply on that basis, that that showing has not been made. I would ask that this court does find that the district court did act appropriately when they sua sponte raised this issue when it came to their attention, and affirm the district court's order in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you. And I see there are no further questions, so we will turn back to appellant, and you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Judge Reyes, the question you left me with as I wrote it down was basically, you know, how does this work? Here's my response. First, I don't think that the blame, and I don't like that word, but the blame is not on the district court with this. And I was not the trial attorney. Things could have ended up differently, but here we are. The district court, as I already stated, under the UCCJEA, does have certain obligations when it does learn or should know that there are some potential issues implicating the UCCJEA, in this case, the initial child custody determination. The agency, as the petitioner in this matter, who specifically asked the Minnesota District Court for relief, so Otter Tail County, also had numerous duties throughout this case, and that is to provide the affidavit required by 518D.209 and the other disclosures that are required. We already talked about the information that was provided in the TPR petition. We did not talk about the information that was provided in the second amended CHIPS petition that was filed sometime in March of 2022. I bring that up because there was a lot of confusion about the status of mom's parental rights at the start of this case. What the second amended petition discloses is that the mother's last address was in Florida and she may have joint custody. Well, let's think about just basic custody principles. There's nothing in the record that these parents were ever married, and by operation of law, mom would have custody. So why would she have joint custody potentially if there wasn't a prior order? I think that from March 2022, the people participating in this process should have been aware that there was a potential jurisdiction issue under the UCCJEA. So what should have happened is inquiry can simply be made. Are there any prior orders? Ask the parents. Do the due diligence. And again, I don't think there's anything in the record to suggest there was bad faith, but the fact of the matter is we have very specific processes under the UCCJEA, and there were numerous errors and failings under the UCCJEA that renders it such that Minnesota did not have jurisdiction at any point of the proceeding. At best, it had jurisdiction after the conclusion of trial on February 27th, and then following the UCCJEA conference the next day. That's at best. And as this court can and should rely on as persuasive authority, the Iowa Court of Appeals sua sponte addressed this issue. I think it was the Iowa court. I'm sorry. It's one of those out-of-state decisions that said that that was error. And sorry, Judge Wheelock, I see you have a question.
Yes, Ms. Stoll, I'm wanting to just ask you about your challenge to the conversion from involuntary to a voluntary petition. In this case, it's my understanding that there was an opportunity for the attorneys to question the father on the record, confirm he understood his rights, that he wasn't under duress, he consulted an attorney, et cetera. Doesn't that make this case different from and sort of allow us to essentially rule that this was in fact properly converted to a voluntary petition? And do you have a response to the principle of litigation by implied consent, which is that, you know, once that occurred, father was on notice about what he had filed. He had filed it. He had signed the affidavit. And so as the proceedings move forward afterwards, it seems like there is a basis to find that, in fact, the conversion to the voluntary proceedings were properly done.
Judge Reyes, I believe my response to those two questions may take me beyond that time. Do I have permission to respond, knowing I'll keep it as close to the time I have left as possible?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Your Honor, turning to the conversion to a voluntary TPR, since we're running low on time, I will say there are numerous cases cited in my initial brief. Specifically, what I would ask this court to rely on is the fact that it's very clear from prior case law that you cannot convert a involuntary petition to a voluntary TPR without having that ground be available for termination. And the problem is the court made clearly erroneous findings of fact when it determined that the petition was at any point amended to include that good cause for termination. And I think if we go a step further, the Minnesota Supreme Court has noted that that it is it implicates due process ultimately when we are terminating parental rights based on a ground that is not initially alleged. So I would really rest on, I think it's the BJM case, the DF case, if I have my initials correctly, for the proposition that, and finally, I would rely on Rule 58 that says the court can only terminate rights and it has to move, it has to at least find whether the grounds in the petition were proven. We only have the good cause termination ground that the district court determined was proven, none of the grounds for involuntary termination. So because that ground was never formally or properly offered, that's the error. Just briefly on the implied consent and on notice, Judge Wheelock, I would actually answer it the same way I just did, meaning I don't think that that could or would be sufficient to get around the fact that Rule 58 requires the district court, in order to terminate, to determine that that whether the grounds in the petition were proven. None of the grounds in the petition were proven, and that alone is fatal to the order terminating parental rights. I ask that this court reverse.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your written submissions. It was very well done, and we appreciate that. I'm sure your clients do as well. We will be issuing an opinion within the statutory timeframe, and I believe because this is a child custody matter, that timeframe is a shortened timeframe of 45 days. That is the final oral argument for our calendar today, and so court is now in recess. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you, Your Honors.